Welcome to this Westphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is Understanding IBM HTTP Server Administration Using the Westphere Admin Console. My name is Kathy Kuhn, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide 2. In today's session, we will start off by an introduction of our panel of experts. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to understanding IBM HTTP Server Administration using the Web Admin Console. Next, our panel will answer questions they submitted and customer submitted questions. Then we will open a line for a live Q&A period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of today's session. At this time, I would like to pass control over to Bob to introduce the panel of experts. And we will move on to slide 3.
Thank you, Kathy. My name is Bob Richter. I'll be one of the two speakers for this Q&A presentation today. I've been working in WebSphere Level 2 for the last 7 or 8 years. Prior to that, I worked in WebSphere development in some web server administration function, and prior to that, I worked in developing IHS HTTP Server. So with that, I'll let Harold introduce himself.
Thanks, Bob. I'm Harold Fanning. I got about 34 years with the company, worked as a development for several different products, and then came into support. I was not a developer for WebSphere, so I came into WebSphere as a support. I've got a couple more years in support than Bob, I think about 8 years or so. Currently working on the Level 2 scene that supports the IHS web server, the plugin, the WebSphere plugin, and we also support the Edge products like the cache and proxy and load balancer and the ODR server. And Bob is going to start the discussion, so I'll hand it back over to Bob.
Okay.
Slide 4.
Moving on to slide 4. As an introduction, we'll be covering questions in this presentation after a few summary slides pertaining to web server administration. We'll be covering the distributed platforms. We will not be including anything about OS 400 or ZOS web server administration. Move to slide 5. So this is our first question. It's just to get us in the mood, so to speak. What is web server administration? Can we move to slide 6? Okay, so web server administration includes plugin propagation for IHS in all configured environments, unmanaged and managed nodes, and propagation for plugin config XML for non-IHS web servers, but only on managed nodes. It also includes start and stop of the IHS web server on unmanaged and managed nodes, and also includes remote viewing and edit of the IBM HTTP server configuration file. The last feature of the web server administration is web server status, and that's for all web servers that are defined in the WebSphere admin console. Something to note throughout the presentation and the Q&As is that some of the functions are applicable to IHS only, and some of the functions will be applicable to non-IHS web servers as well. Move to slide 7. So appropriately, the next question is, what are the components of web server administration? Can we move to slide 8? There are three main components of web server administration. The two listed here are the node agent and the IBM administration server. The node agent, which is a separate JVM, runs on the same machine with the application server and the web server. A web server that is administered by a node agent is defined to a managed node, and a managed node is any node on which there's a WebSphere node agent running. So the other component on this panel is the IBM administration server. It's just another instance of the IHS web server, and uses the same executable, but it's running with a unique configuration file called admin.conf, and it has a special IBM admin module which handles the web server administration requests on behalf of the IHS web server, again running in a different instance. So a web server that's administered by the IBM administration server is defined to an unmanaged node, and for definition, an unmanaged node is any node that doesn't have a node agent running. Can we move to slide 9? The third component is the more obvious, the outward component is the for web server administration is the WebSphere administration console, which is accessible in Deployment Manager or the base WebSphere environment. The administration console is the GUI from which you submit the web server admin requests. So to give you a little bit of information about, you know, the node agent and the IBM administration service, both of them must be running for any administration requests to come from the Deployment Manager console. So the node agent is that same node agent that administers the application server, but the IBM administration server and the node agent is a JVM, running as a JVM. The IBM administration server is started on Windows as a service. The service is usually called IBM HTTP Administration for WebSphere Application Server, and then the version. But on Unix, it started and stopped using the admin CTL script. So if you move to slide 10, this is an image to give you a in-one-place complete picture of the components. The image here shows the administration, web server administration through a managed node and an unmanaged node in a network deployment in a DMGR environment. The node on the left is managed and the node on the right is unmanaged. The web servers in blue are administered by the deployment manager through the admin console. And then the web server MBeam, which is the little circle, brownish tan circle in the middle, that's what is used to send requests to either the node agent on the managed node or to the IBM administration server on the unmanaged node. So notice that the node agent and the IBM administration server, they run in separate processes. The node agent is a JVM. The IBM administration server process is, it's a C source code, but it is a separate process, and actually processes. It has a few child processes. So that's about it on components. Can we move to slide 11? Some people ask questions, what is the difference between the Deployment Manager console and the standalone base application server console? Can we move to slide 12? The basic difference between the Deployment Manager console or a Deployment Manager console and the base admin console is in the scope of the entities that it can administer. The Deployment Manager admin console allows for administration of app servers, applications, web servers, and other resources, but it's across a multi-node environment using the node agent. A base admin console allows administration of the same entities, app servers, web servers, applications, other resources, but only to a single application server environment. So with that, I'm going to move to slide 13, and Harold's going to take over from here.
Okay, thanks, Bob. So this next question is about moving to a V8 or V8.5 environment where we introduce the WebSphere customization toolbox. The question is, how does that WebSphere customization toolbox affect the configuration of the web server admin? So to understand that, I thought I would just talk about, you know, the sequence of installation in a V8 would be that you would install the IHS web server, and then you would install the plugin. And in the previous time, during the plug-in V7 prior to V8, during the installation of the plugin, some of the questions that are now asked in this customization toolbox were done during the install. So that's not done during the plugin install anymore. So there's no admin server or anything like that are configured yet. And then you would have to install the WebSphere customization toolbox. This is all being done on the web server. And that toolbox has a tool in it that we call the plugin configuration tool that will then prompt you through a series of questions that used to be done during the installation. So if you could move on to slide 14. The plug-in configuration tool replaces the configuration previously done during the install, which means it will actually create a web server script. For those familiar with the way 7 and 8 work, you still had a script, but it's now created here to be ported over to the deployment manager or the base application server to be installed, to be run over there to install the web server to the admin console. So after you get driven through the PCT questions, you then end up with a script that you can port over and create the web server to the admin console. And it, when you get to the admin console, it will also go in and add to the ATV comp file, which is the configuration file for the web server, some of the things that you need to use the plugin, like the location of the plugin config.xml. And what it will throw in there at first is just sort of a default placeholder config.xml, because later from the admin console you'll be, you know, generating and propagating the real thing with all the maps, applications and things like that. It will also update at that point. The HTTP comp file will be updated to point to the load module for that plugin. And these are things you would have seen before when you installed the plugin. Now it's not until after you run the PCT tool that he'll go in there and update that httpd.conf file. So if you can move to slide 15. Yeah, as you, for HTTP admin server, you also have to set up the correct user ID and password. So you'll be asked for those during the PCT tool as well. And that will, so the PCT will go ahead and add that user and password to the authentication file for the admin server. And it'll be the file, the admin.password file. It'll add the password to the web server repository over in the web server definition when you run the script, so that the two match up when you actually have to go from your admin console over to the web server. And then in Windows only, it'll also create the IBM, the Windows service, as Bob talked about earlier. So that's when you'll finally see the admin service show up in the Windows Service Panel. So when you install, that won't be there. And a lot of people question that. It's like, how come I didn't get my admin server installed as a web service, or as a Windows service? And that's because the PCT now is going to delay and put that in as the Windows service. You can go ahead and move to slide 16. And then for those Unix users, you guys are familiar with this, that you have to create the user and group so that the admin console has permissions to update those files, the plugin files that are required across to the web server. So it'll create the Unix user and group, and to do that, of course, the PCT has to be run as a root user. So the user and group are recommended for the admin server for protection. And it'll go in and actually update that admin.conf file with the user and group that you just created in the IHS directive for the user group to match. And then it'll go ahead and actually change the permissions for the admin server so that you can write to those files, the HTTP comp file and the plugin config.xml, when you come in and access that admin service. Move to slide 17. The point of this presentation, or the question and answer that Bob and I are given, is not really to go into the detail of the PCT on the WCT, but we put this page in, this screen in, to provide the link that there's already been a Westy that's pretty detailed on the use of the WCT and the PCT when configuring the plugin. Move to slide 18. So here we go. So what are the common problems? We picked a few common problems to go over before we open questions up. So you can move to slide 19. Common problem is the propagate fails. I've got everything set up. I generate my plugin. I do propagate, and it doesn't get propagated down. Propagate in the admin console has to be able to connect to the admin server or the node agent on the other side in order to push all this stuff down and have the, like Bob says, the MBean do the work that has to be done. So common problems for things like that are maybe there's a firewall issue, someone has changed a host name or port or blocked that connection going both ways back and forth. Bullet number two, sometimes if you have multiple aliases, and the OS decides, you know, the alias that you think is going to be the server name, so to speak, is not the one that the OS has generated for that. You may have to update to use the host name of the admin server or resolve it so that it matches what you've selected in your admin comp file. If you're not sure, there's tools like NSLookup to say, you know, what is the address that I'm supposed to be using in here. If it still doesn't work and you're having some kind of DNS issue where the host names are not being resolved, then you can go and actually use the raw IP address to go ahead and get down to the admin server on the web server. Go to slide 20. And again, now going back into Unix, you got and you have the same problem where you may get down to that server, but the user ID that you've come down with as the admin user and group and user and group may not have the correct permissions to, even though we said that that was done previously as the PCT. This is you may have to go in there and actually check like the LSAL command to look at all the permissions for those files for the user owner group. Or user and the group, and make sure that he has permission to update those files. And if you're not sure about the process itself, you might want to pull up the process for either the node agent or the admin server that you're using. And these are some of the Unix commands to accomplish that. The admin conf is something that would have been started with as the admin server down there on the web server. And the like Bob said, the node agent is actually a Java process, so you would look for that Java process. And then make sure that process has the correct permissions for those files. You can proceed to slide 21. The other problem is you get there and you have the wrong authentication, and that's just a matter of checking your user ID and password that you had in the admin password. Sometimes they get changed or don't match or something happened where you changed files or whatever. This chart here is saying to correct that, it's probably easier to just go ahead and reset that user ID and password, both on the web server as well as the app server, than it is to try to figure out what went wrong. So these are the commands that you would do to update and make sure you have the right user ID and password for the admin service running on the web server. And go ahead and proceed to slide 22. But the other thing that we do through the admin console is give the status of the web server, whether it started or not. This is actually fairly trivial, but when it's incorrect, all we really do when we check the status is we go and make sure that port in the socket is acceptable, right? So if you're running the default port 80, we'll say, is port 80 open and listening? Yes, it is, then he must be running. So the problems might be that somebody has slammed that port and we can't get down to that port anymore, or the port can't respond back the other way. So that's a matter of, again, doing some network administration to say, can I do it myself? Can I telnet? Can I run it? Can I get to that port? Go ahead and proceed to slide 23. Common problems for start-stop of the admin console fails. Again, kind of went through some of this. The start-stop function from the admin console, if you're not root, the admin server has not been started as root. And you have to be root if you're using a port less than 1024. It must be started as root. So the admin server has to be able to start the child process as well as root. So we'll go on to slide 24. Before we open the line up for questions, there is a DW answers section on this as well, and we had some questions that were submitted. I'd like to kind of go over them quickly if I could. And the reason I'm saying quickly, some of these questions were more related to the actual plugin XML file itself as opposed to the concept of how do I remotely admin. The first question that was asked was, why does the plugin config XML contain both app servers and web server port definitions? Now, the XML is going to contain virtual host groups that represent the virtual host on the admin side, on the app server side. These values are needed to match those incoming ports. So the plugin, when you generate the plugin, it's being generated over in the app server side. So he needs to know what ports the web server is actually listening on. So that's why he has to have those web server ports as well as his own application server ports so that the plugin knows where to route the request over to. And that's all in the series of plugin smarts, if you will, when he comes in and has to match those requests. So it comes in on one port, and he has to match it to a matching URL, host name, and port up to the app server. how can we ensure the usage of Java 7 with the HTTP server is compatible with the settings of Java 6? IHS uses its own Java. It installs it under its own directory, and that's the Java that he's going to use to... The only thing he's really using the Java for is his IKEyman utility, and the IKEyman utility being part of the Gskit that's installed with IHS. So it's not recommended that you change or change any of the options that we install on the IHS version of Java in its installed folders. How best do we utilize the virtual host definitions? Should it be one per app server, one per application, one per cell? This question, really, to understand it, the virtual host definitions are really applicable to the applications only. They're not related to the app server or the cell. So that virtual host group and alias is what we use to map and route the request to the appropriate application. Next question was, how do we define virtual host groups as they appear in the plugin config XML? They're different than the virtual host, and in what way? The virtual host group and the web server virtual host are not the same. The virtual host groups are generated from the virtual host definition and the alias in the web server repository, and they're used to map requests to the applications. The virtual hosts are part of the HTTP conf file and allow you to run more than one website from a single instance of web server. So they're the way within the HTTP conf file you would define your virtual host to have different alias names coming in to support multiple hosts. So two different concepts. Next question was, what is the currently recommended most secure production cipher and server variables set up to set up my configuration? That's a changing question. That's a hard question to answer other than, you know, apply the latest fix pack. And the latest fix pack for IHS V7, V8, V8.5 will always include the latest set of ciphers and algorithms that we support. The reason this question is probably here because of all the current vulnerability questions and things like that, it's recommended that you now remove any RC4 ciphers, and we provide I can provide a link on DW Answers for that on where that is documented. We also all lived through the Poodle vulnerability where we now disable SSL v3 and use TLS only. IHS v7, however, only supports TLS 1.0. You have to have v8 in order to step up to TLS 1.1 or 1.2. The next question, when is it best to leave the web server admin separate from the app server admin? Are all setup and config functions successful through either front end? And I'm guessing that this question was asked because of maybe the IHS DMZ. So if you want to IHS and the DMZ, as Bob mentioned, the node agent is Java, and Java is not as secure as the C code process that you would have in the admin function. So if you have your IHS pushed out into the DMZ, you probably want to run it as the admin server to protect any kind of Java hack that might go on to the node agent. What's the best way to protect that configuration? Don't really have an answer for that other than whatever your OS administration is for any protecting any kind of files, you know, backup copies and preserve the repository in the admin console before you make any changes. Best way I could think of to answer that question. So with that, Kathy, I think we're now ready to go ahead and turn it back over to you.
Well, thank you very much. I'd like to thank our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. But now it's time to move on to the question and answer session.
The first question comes from Christian. You may now proceed.
Hi. The question is about you were referring that PCT tool can only be installed using our root user. Is there any alternate? Because we have restriction to have the root privileges. We will having that, you know, our own generic user to administer those web server instances. In this case, how are we going to deal with that?
Okay. This is Bob. There is a restriction. Let me explain the reason for the restriction and then maybe a way that you can get around the restriction. The reason for the restriction, as Harold said, is that at some point we need to be able to create the user and the group. And so what we didn't mention is if you had an existing user and group, We therefore don't need to run the run as root to create a user in group. So that's and I'm not familiar with the code, but that's one possibility to try where the user in group have already been created. I believe that the query is not root dependent, and you may get around it that way. The other way to deal with this is to not click that checkbox that says set up admin script or something. And if you don't check that, you then need to be aware that you need to create your own user in group and therefore update the admin.conf manually on your own. And I can say that the PCT tool will complete, and you shouldn't get any errors by taking the option of saying I do not want to go through that process through the tool. But then you're obligated to make those changes on your own manually.
Right. So with having some changes, customization, then we can go get away from the root access, right?
Yes. Go ahead.
Is it documented in the instructions manual?
There's a link to the script called Setup ADM, SetAdmin. If you do a query in the Info Center, if you can't find it, send me or Harold an email, and we'll get you that link and some of the info. There's supposed to be a link that says you can go through this script by executing these commands manually. And the reason was a while ago, you know, some Unix administrators, being protective, didn't want their install people running as root.
All right. Thanks, Bob. I do have other questions. Can I proceed? You say that remote administration of web server instances using DMG are consoled, right? We have a current setup, something like server A, which is only hosting that IHS instance, and server B and C hosting that application server instance. So in that case, it's going to be the remote server for DMGR for web server instance, right? How are we going to manage that? Is that possible?
If I understand that correctly, I mean, you have IHS on one box and you have multiple app servers on two other boxes?
Right, correct.
One having the DMGR.
Yeah, one of them having a DMGR. That is application server.
Right, and that's fine. That's actually typical. So what it is that the IHS is remote, and IHS being remote, not on a node with a node agent and app servers, you would have the IBM administration server running in order to do your administration.
Right. Will it be able to manage using the same DMGR console?
Absolutely. There's no reduction in function whether you're interfacing to a managed node or an unmanaged node.
So in that event that we need to have some credentials passing to that server A, right, from server B?
Yeah, you're talking about the admin password and user ID.
Okay. So you're saying that is that WebSphere admin user ID and password, or it's a Unix server admin user ID and password? What you're referring to?
The IBM administration server is protected using basic authentication, and the basic authentication file is admin.passwd. That contains the user and the password. So that's kind of a minimal type of protection that's offered for the administration server, which is out there. So the deployment manager has the associated user and password, and it passes them in the authentication header on every administration request.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Bo.
The next question comes from Mr. Gonzalez.
Is there a way to secure the IBM ATP server admin services over an SSL connection?
Yes, there is a link out there that explains it, and I can get that link.
So what part will be the admin services? Would it be the client or the server?
In that case, the deployment manager is the client, and the IBM administration server is the server.
Right, so he needs the key.kdb file with a personal certificate to send back.
So it will be the opposite of the HTTP server?
Opposite of plugin.
Oh, opposite of plugin, correct. Thank you so much for your help.
The next question comes from a participant who was not able to record his name.
Hi, this is Soma. So, I actually, you know, you guys cannot hear me. I'm sorry for that. I have a question regarding, you know, Cypher Suite. Since, as you have mentioned, right, so we have currently having ISIS version 7 and WebSphere application server also version 7 we're running. And the Cypher Suite, as you said, it's TLS 1.0 is, you know, used for ISIS 7. So we have a requirement in the future from our security team to go to TLS 1.1 and 1.2. So we are not in a situation to go for the upgrade to, you know, version 8 and version 8.5.5. So what would be the, you know, workaround solution to have TLS version 1.1 and 1.2 to be enabled for version IBM was version 7 or ISIS version 7?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think I understand the problem, and it's becoming a common problem. I think what it is this. WebSphere 7.0 support WebSphere. App Server 7.0 supports 1.1 and 1.2. IHS version 7 does not support TLS 1.1 and 1.2. And so the dilemma is, while WebSphere will offer you that protection without getting WebSphere App Server, will get you to a more desirable protocol, we're limited in IHS and the plugin. And, you know, IHS, it doesn't matter because IHS is from the client to the web server, but it's the plugin that shares the same security libraries that doesn't have 1.1 and 1.2 support. So the only alternative in that environment is to install IHS v8, and with that, then you get tagged along with some additional requirements of then having to install plugin v8, but that will give you 1.1 and 1.2 support.
So that being said, IHS v8 and plugin v8 will run in front of a WAS 7.0. So instead of your entire environment going to 8.0, you could just take IHS and plug into 8.0.
Okay. I guess I'm clear. I was actually about to ask that question, and you guys answered. Okay. Thank you.
One more thing I want to add, though, is that version 7, IHS and plugin support TLS 1.0. So if you configured WebSphere App Server to negotiate down to 1.0, it's certainly better than SSL v3, and that's a possible workaround as well. But if you're going to make the app server 1.1.1.2 exclusive, then you have no choice.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. Thank you.
The next question comes from Mr. Bidding.
Okay. This is Vijay here. Let's say I have an application deployed to a cluster with 5 cluster members, but unfortunately the application fails to come up, or if it is experiencing a problem on cluster member 1, how do we prevent the request going to the JVM, the bad application on JVM 1 from the web server?
Well, that's the job of the plugin, actually. The plugin will try to connect to that server, and the connection will fail. And because he's in a cluster, he'll just go on to the next server in the cluster. And he won't try that markdown server again until the retry count.
No, the JVMs are healthy on the JVM one, okay? All the cluster members are healthy. But the application is having issue on JVM one, but other JVMs, they are absolutely completely running fine and no issues.
Okay. I mean, the way we would debug that in the PMR is we don't know if it's something between from the client to the app server. I mean, so we would look at plugin traces as well as web container traces on the app server that's running the app that's causing an issue.
I guess if you know then in advance, if what you're asking is how do I prevent that, if I know I got a problem, is to maybe remove that JVM from the primary server list, so that it's not being selected.
Okay.
Well, one other thought is, you know, again, we always look at simplifying the problem. You know, does it, instead of going through this plug-in IHS, does the same request fail when you issue it directly to the single app server?
Yes, it is failing on the single app server.
Right, I think he's saying, yeah. I know it's going to fail because okay. I know that application has problems, but I don't want you picking that JVM because the JVM's okay, but the app's not running. So
you want to dynamically take it out of contention for requests?
Yes.
All right. There is a way to do that through the plugin, and the way you would do that is if you're using round robin load balancing, you set the load balance weight to zero in the plugin config XML. And what that does is it'll prevent all future requests, future non-session affinity requests, from going to that application server, period. This isn't tuned down to the application level.
Yeah, that whole JVM would have to be taken out.
Does that help, or are you looking for something that's really more fine-tuned towards the application?
I'm more looking at the application level.
That might be an ODR thing with help policies and some of the functions that ODR has with plug-in intelligent management. There might be ways to do that, but I don't know it.
Okay, thank you.
We do have several questions that were in the group chat. First one that came in from Juan David. When I update the context root of an application, I should generate and propagate the plugin using the admin console.
Correct. Any changes to that application will have to regenerate and repropagate the plugin.
The next question came in from Stefano. We set the read-write timeout under the web server plugin properties a negative value in case of maintenance of a node to force down status in a stopped node. Can we keep this configuration always on?
I was not aware that setting read-write timeout negative, which is read-write timeout on the app server side is...
Server I.O. timeout.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's the negative server I.O. timeout.
Yes. All right, sorry. Now I got it. Yes. You have an option. If you set it negative, the app server gets marked down, and that's a trade-off. It gets marked down for the duration of another plugin property retry interval, which is usually 60 seconds. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a matter of what you desire. In your instance, you may not want to retry an app server that you just marked down due to a server I/O timeout. In another installation, another customer might want you to not mark it down and just retry and continue on. So you can do that. It really shouldn't be explained from a maintenance mode standpoint. You can do that in a production environment, but it really just has to do with what you prefer. Do you want to retry to the same JVM, or do you want to mark it down and fail over immediately to another JVM? And again, that could deal with session affinity, but you can certainly leave things that way.
We have another question here from Mr. Sandeep Pan.
Okay.
Your line is now open. Please proceed.
Hey, hi. We have IHS and App Server on SansolarWiz right now. So, like, we have a requirement, like, to move IHS to a different platform, like Linux, maybe. So, in this case, like if I have IHS on Red Hat Linux and have my application server on a SansolarWiz platform, so is there any, like, impact or issue from the licensing standpoint?
You mean from a licensing standpoint?
Yes, yes.
Not that I know of at all.
I don't know about that.
I see what you're saying. They're on two different boxes.
Right.
I mean, IHS
license agreement. The only thing that is specific about it is that I know IHS license agreement is to be a front end to WebSphere application server. Logically, there has to be, I'm not a license guy, but it has to be more typical that customers have IHS on a box that's not the same as the app server. And then again, maybe there's something about base express or network deployment that makes that unique. So I guess I don't know.
Okay. Yes, thanks.
The next question was from Agathy. What is the recommended port for the IHS admin if the server is located on the DMZ?
There's no real benefit that I know of, or negative or positive, to what the IHS port would be. The default is 8008, I think, or 8008, and it's just a higher port because for an admin function, you don't want to overuse all those ports less than 1024. So there's no recommended port other than the default. And there's nothing wrong with if you have multiple administration servers that you can have 8008, 8009, 8010.
We have another question which comes from Sam.
Hi. My question is, can the, tools that is PCT or WCT run on GUI mode for IBM WAS 855? And so this environment. So I was doing installation. I saw that the PMT, the profile management tool, is not able to, they don't have profile management tool to run in GUI mode for Solaris. So I was curious to know whether PCT or WCT will run in GUI mode for IBM WAS 855 in Solaris environment.
I am not sure I know the answer to that. Solaris.
It's funny. I was going to say, of course, GUI works, but I think there was a PMR recently where there wasn't an issue with Solaris.
I also raised a PMR for that. The PMT, I am not able to open the profile management tool in GUI mode for Solaris. So what I heard from IBM is that they don't have PMT to run on GUI mode for Solaris. You can run that in Linux.
You're saying PMT, the profile manager.
Yeah.
Did you try the PCT?
No, that's why I'm curious to know whether PCT or WCT, whether it's run or not.
I don't know. I just happened to have overheard a conversation about a PMR that with Solaris. They're telling you to use command line, right?
Yes. I did the same, actually. I did it in command line. Solaris for PMT.
And command line is not that much fun on PCT.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The GUI would be a lot easier. I don't have a Solaris box to even go try it, but I would say just to close the loop, if you're having a problem with PCT tool, open a PMR so that in case someone's addressing this problem from PMT only, that we address it from both.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
But I don't know anything else about it.
Yeah, thank you. No problem.
Thank you. At this time, there are no questions.
And we will go on to slide 36 for the summary of today's session.
As Bob, basically, in summary, we talked about the PCT tool. We talked about the components of the administration server and what their functions are, how to start them up. Through questions, I think we addressed some SSL issues, which, may be food for future sessions like this. And I guess that's about it.
Well, thank you, Harold and Bob, for a great presentation. At this time, we will conclude the Ask the Experts session. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you, and a sincere thank you to you, Bob and Harold, for presenting today. You all have a great day.
Thank you.